Well, first of all, my heart is so happy to hear Kit again today. Kit and I are dear, longtime friends, and she's been in San Antonio many times. And I also am aware, and as I'm just feeling you here this morning, I'm realizing how blessed you are all feeling for this community, aren't you? I mean, this is a beautiful community, filled with spirit and with tremendous leadership. I mean, you're in great hands. Reverend Ellen is really super. I know you're grateful, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the Unity Movement is really fortunate to have her leadership here in our world today. With that, I'm remembering, and this happens to me when I go to a different Unity church, I'm remembering the first time that I stepped into a Unity church. Do you remember when you first attended a Unity church, whether it was this one or another one? I remember walking into like an ocean of unfamiliar. You know, I didn't know anybody there. I didn't know much about Unity, only I had read the Daily Word, so that's all I knew. I remember sitting down in the middle and people all around me, not sure what to expect. It had been a long time since I'd been in a church. And then one of the first things that happened was one of the first things that happened here today. This great statement, there is only one presence and one power in my life. Good. God, good. I felt that. And then shortly after that, the minister began to speak and said, you know, that's true about God. It's true about you too. That's your nature. Your nature is good. I started to cry. How many of you cried first time you went to church here? Oh, my word. And then how many kept crying the next couple of weeks? Yeah, that was me too. So I thought about it over the years. What was that about? You know, what was it? What was going on in me such that I cried, that I felt this incredible surge of emotion? It occurred to me that my wisdom system was at work. That aha and uh-oh place in us, you know, the gut, that is the seat of wisdom, our divine wisdom faculty. And that wisdom knew that truth, that truth. It just reverberated throughout my being, and it brought tears to my eyes because it was so right on. I got it, and I was at home. You know, and then it occurred to me that, you know, Unity didn't make this idea up, that God is the only power, and that if that's true, if God is everywhere-ness, then I can't be outside of that. It must be what I am too, that I must also be divine. Unity didn't make that up. I mean, since then, I did a lot of studying, you can imagine, and I've read that, you know, even Jesus, quoting the scriptures that he grew up on, said, let me tell you something, guys. You are gods, children of the Most High, every one of you. I mean, that's in the scriptures, was Jesus' message. In Buddhism, we read, every being has the Buddha nature. Sounds the same. Even in Hindu, man, I was in a yoga ashram community for many years, and all the scriptures, and there's countless volumes of them. And in them is this word, the self, with a capital S. And everywhere it's mentioned, simultaneously is mentioned, that self is not separate from you. Well, I don't know if this is true for you, but it was not the message that I grew up on. I grew up with a very different message, in a very loving home, a very, very well-intentioned community and church. The message that I got was that I somehow, by no fault of my own, inherited a sin gene. How about you? Did it ever make sense? Even when I was 5 years old in catechism class, so now you know what religion that was, it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to my little mind, my young mind. It didn't make sense. Yeah, and I had been told it wasn't even like my doing. It was like, on the way out of the birth canal, I'm condemned. Didn't make sense. doesn't make sense to me yet today. Now, I'm very respectful of all faiths. I really am. I just heartfeltly disagree with that principle. So I'll just say that. So, you know, over time, I've really, and I'm still awakening to this reality. I am divine. My nature, my origin, my being is divine. And this, I believe, is one of the most essential awarenesses that we can grow into. Kit's song, you know, I'm willing to be the change I wish to see. I'm willing to be divine. I'm willing to know that that's my nature. And that's not my ego asserting itself. It's my need, it's our need to know our true nature like never before. So that why? So that we can be the change we wish to seek. So that we can implant into the ethers of this universe a message of good, of God at the heart of all beings. Are you with me on that? I thought you might be. So, you know, but I questioned this over the years, and perhaps you have too. I remember the one time that I finally really, maybe not finally, but I really got it. I really got it. Was when my daughter was born. My daughter Alicia. She was our second child. The first birth was kind of a traumatic one, but Alicia's birth was going to be a natural birth. The doctor was there, the midwife was there, my husband was there with his, you know, catcher's mitts, you know, he was ready. So Alicia's born after a very intensive labor, and out she comes, and Giles catches her, and I'm watching as my husband takes her and lays her in this warm bath, and this tight little ball of potential is just there. But as I watched from where I was, her feet, her little toes and feet began to turn pink. And then that pink life just started to spring up. And she sort of filled out like a balloon inflating a little bit, you know, until her face turned pink and she opened her eyes. And it was magnificent. I remember then Giles wrapping her and placing her in my arms. And she was just here, and I was in amazement at her. And my husband, the midwife, the doctor, and the nurse, I knew we were all standing there, and I know they were all thinking the exact same thing that I was thinking. God help you, you miserable little sinner. Yeah, really? Do you know anyone? Can you name one person in your life that has ever had that thought at the birth of a new baby? So what do we believe, really? What do we believe, really? That's my question. Because everyone I know sees perfection. Even if that child is born with an imperfection in human form, we see perfection, don't we? We see wholeness. We see godness in that little being. That did it for me. That really turned my lights on and turned me around in that understanding. All right, so here's the thing. I've grown in this awareness, and no doubt you've grown in this awareness all these years. And my question to myself is, if I'm so divine, how come I'm not always acting like it? Because, you know, I'll just tell you, I'm not. I'm trying. How about you? I'm trying. I do my best every day. Some days I get it, I'm right on it. So I've pondered this question for a long while, and I continue to do so. One of the things that I can understand, and is true, that if I had never known it, then I couldn't be expected to know it or act like it, right? And there are people, and there have been times in my life when I haven't known it, growing up, for example, right? So there's a story about a farmer who was raising chickens. He was out in the cliffs one day in the little town where he lived, out beyond the town, and he saw a baby eagle had dropped out of its nest and landed on the ground. And it was alive but injured. The farmer, in his compassion, picked it up and brought it back home and was looking around like, where am I going to put it? Well, it'll be safe in the chicken's coop. So put it in the chicken's coop, right? Some of you are nodding your head, you know the story. Well, if you don't, I'm going to tell it to you. And even if you do, I'm going to tell it to you. So the farmer puts it in there. Several days later, the farmer's friend wanders by and says, what's that in the chicken coop? And by then, the little eaglet had started eating chicken food and started following all the little chicks around and started waddling like a chick and started squawking like a chick or whatever they do. What do they do? What do chicks do? Cheep. They cheepen like a chip. See, that's why I don't say that word. So by then, you know, the farmer looks at the thing and says, well, that's a chicken. Well, his friend said, well, that ain't no chicken. What are you talking about? That doesn't look at all like a chicken. Well, it is like a chicken. It is a chicken. See, it looks just like a chicken. It's acting just like a chicken. The farmer's friend was so disturbed by this that he went away scratching his head, and the next day came back and said, I've got to do something about this. This just isn't right. So he plucked up the little eaglet from the chicken coop, and he took it up on the roof, and he held his hand out with it, and he said, look, you were never meant to be a chicken. You were meant to be an eagle, so fly, eagle, fly. He's trying to swoop him off. Well, the baby just looks at him and turns around and is like, it's far down there. Are you crazy? And he walked right back up his arm, and back in the chicken coop he went. Farmer's friend was just so upset about it. He couldn't sleep at night. I mean, he just knew this was wrong. This shouldn't be the way that this little one was being raised. One morning, early before dawn, he came back again into the farmer's chicken coop, and he swept up the little eaglet again, took it back out. This time he went to where the eagles were. He went out to the cliffs, and he very carefully climbed the side of the cliff holding the eaglet. And this time they were up high enough so that they could see the eagles swooping out of their nests and beginning to soar in the morning sky. And this time, when the friend held the baby's the arm out and let the baby sit on it, and he was teaching him, see, these are your people. These are your people. You are not meant to just waddle around in a chicken's coop. You are meant to fly. Look. Well, all of a sudden, the little wings just started twitching. You know, and before you knew it, this baby was like getting it, starting to feel all the force of the energy around him. And before long, he took off and he started flying with the others. And in his thrill, this guy shouting out, see, you were never meant to be a chicken. You're meant to be an eagle. Fly, eagle, fly. Once we get it, we can do that. Once he got it, he could do that. He could live as he was meant to live. You know, one of, I think, the most poignant moments in movie history, at least in my opinion to date, was this scene from the movie Dead Man Walking. Have you seen it? Many of you seen it? And this is the convicted killer, Matthew Poncelot, was about to walk to his execution. Sister Helen Pergean was sitting with him in those final few moments before he walked down the long hall. And he said to her, tearfully, Sister, I know that I'm a condemned man. I know I'm going to hell for murdering those children. But even so, I want you to know that I prayed for those kids. Sister looked at him. She put her hands, well, she couldn't touch him, but she put her hands out as if to put them on his shoulder, looked right into his eyes and said, Matthew Poncelot, you are a child of God. And God loves you. I love you. He cried. He cried like I cried in my first time in a Unity church. And he said, nobody ever told me. So it makes me wonder, you know, how many Matthew Poncelots are sitting in our prisons today, having never been told, having never awakened to this reality that we're here for a purpose, a spiritual purpose, and that we can know who we are and live that way. But guess what? You and I, we don't have that excuse anymore. Because we know. You know, so that's no longer a relevant thing for us. And maybe part of, by the way we live, maybe we can be that kind of presence in which people who don't yet know this reality can begin to know it for themselves. That would be a great good that we can do on this planet, right? And so the other reason, what else then? The other reason, the only thing I can think of is that we forget. We forget. We're darn busy, aren't we? We are so busy that we are distracted from the really essential things of life more often than not. I'll speak for myself. The Sufis call it the 100,000 veils of illusion that separate us from us. And a wonderful Unity teacher and author, Imelda Shanklin, wrote once this beautiful, poignant thing. I wish I could quote it entirely, but I will say the first part that I know. She says, "There is a deep and awful homesickness in the heart of humanity." And she goes on to say that that can be satisfied with nothing less than a full realization of our true nature, that we are divine. We forget. We forget in our busyness. And that's what I love about Unity. And those of you who attend here regularly and who have become members and who are in the engagement phase of your relationship with this community, you know, who are involved in service and in study and in celebrating together. You know, those of you who do that, you've found, haven't you, that Unity is a great place for remembering. That's what I love about Unity, is that it is a practical method for remembering our true nature, that everything we do in Unity is designed for us to awaken or reawaken to that great idea within us, right? And so when we come to classes, we get that. When we sing on a Sunday morning and when we go deep in meditation, as we're going to do in a moment, you know, we get that. And we have all these opportunities to really remember, 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 remember. And just like children who are learning new words and new ideas, that repetition, you know how they love it. Read it again, Grandma, read it again, read it again. Oh, let's read it again, you know, till we're tired of it. But we need the same thing, don't we? We need that. Remember, let's do it again. Let's say it again. Let's sing it again. Let's remember our true nature. And I learned the value of that as my children were raised in Unity, my son and daughter. And so this one time when my son was in seventh grade, by then he had been a Unity kid for a long time. He was in his school one day, and I'll just say this. Adrian was at the kindest thing I could say is he was a restless student. And the school that that our children attended was pretty non-diverse. Our children were two of just those that you could pick out in the school that were from multicultural backgrounds. So my son was sitting in his chair during a class, and he dropped his pencil. Common occurrence. He leaned down to pick up his pencil, and as he did that, the boy sitting in the seat next to him leaned down with him and whispered loud enough to be heard by the room, "Just like an N to drop your pencil." Yeah. I can't even say the word. I would never say the word. My son was stunned. It wasn't common to hear that out loud in our community. But he sat up and he didn't know what to do with that. He was very disturbed. So he came home and spoke about it over dinner. We were talking about it, and Giles, my husband, and his sister and I, we were all sitting around the table. And I asked him, "Adrian, what would you like to do about that?" He said, "Boy, I'd like to talk to that kid." And I said, "Well, that sounds like a really good idea." So the next day, Adrian went to the school counselor about it. Maybe we had talked about that idea too first. So he went to the counselor. The counselor wisely asked him, "Adrian, what would you like to do about it?" And then Adrian repeated, "I'd like to talk to that kid." The counselor and Adrian invited this boy into the room with them, and the three of them sat for a visit. I wish I could have been a fly on that wall. I have no idea what they said. All I know is that Adrian and that boy walked out as good friends, and they remained so through the rest of their high school years. This is what I know. Adrian had his sense of self intact. By then he knew, "I'm divine. I'm divine. Nothing someone could say to me could change that. I don't need to be hurt and upset, but I'm here as a teacher You know, I'm sure in seventh grade he didn't consciously have those thoughts in his mind, but his soul knew that. I mean, his being knew that. And he was able in some way to reflect not something that would have this boy reinforce the thought he had about my son, but instead to change his whole perception and to see it differently and to, in his own way, awaken to his own nature, which is when you know you're divine, you see everyone else in that way. You can't not, you see. So this is what I know about unity and about the possibilities for us, is that we continue to awaken to this great reality. And I just bless you with that continual expansion of your awareness of who you are, because nothing less than knowing that you are divine will satisfy that internal homesickness, right? So as we prepare to have a time of meditation, I remember what Ram Dass, I had a conversation with his master, and he was talking about going to see his master. And his master says to him, well, you could go visit a master, or you could just be the master. So we could talk about all day about these principles, but why don't we just be in the consciousness of our divine awareness right now in meditation? So let me ask you to just sit back, take a few deep breaths, and in your own way to make your body comfortable so that you can be still and yet alert. And breathe, breathe the breath of awareness that says, I am alive. I am divine life. Breathe with gusto. Just breathe as if you might not get a next one. Breathe and fill every space within the body cavity with life. This is what honors our divine nature. We allow the breath to be like a cleanser that sweeps through the stale thoughts in our brain, sweeping clean, bringing us into this present moment, fresh and new. And as I speak the following words, let them be your own words to yourself, your words of awakening and presence. I know I am divine. So I settle into my place in my body temple, the very centers of divine energy. So I draw my attention right now to my solar plexus, to the region of divine wisdom, often called the second brain, where there's huge networks and ganglion of nerves that are intelligent and that literally give me information before my brain registers the information. This is the seat of divine wisdom, my aha and uh-oh center. I imagine, or I sense, or I visualize a soft yellow light, the light of wisdom, the bright sunshine of awareness, as it streams throughout the solar plexus and my whole abdominal cavity, bathing me in wisdom. When I ask myself, how do I know that God is and that I am divine? I know by this sensory and by this wisdom center. So I trust my gut. I trust what I know. I am the power of divine judgment, judging what is right for me. I can look at a situation and I can tell by the way I feel, by my uh-oh or aha sense of it, I can tell the way to go. My power of discernment is strong and a clear guide. It is my compass. It is my conscience. It is my integrity. I trust my gut. Divine wisdom is the seed of intuition, where I know what I know without knowing how I know it, but I know it. And this is God. This is the voice, the still small voice that I trust. So I trust in this moment of rest. I become still, and I know. God is wisdom. I am divine wisdom, knowing. And in my knowing, I trust that all that God is my true nature. All that God is my true nature. And every time I become aware of one of my powers, of the power of wisdom, of love, of release, of strength, and all my powers, every time I awaken my power, I am claiming my divine identity and participating in the forward, onward, upward movement of life on planet Earth and beyond. There is only one power, God. And I am that power, the visible expression of it. I am divine. This I know. And so it is.